Alright, here we go. Good morning, this is Commissioner Brian Kalk. We're meeting today in the 12th floor of the Capitol for a special meeting to deal with several issues. I'm joined by my colleague Commissioner Kevin Kramer, and Commissioner Bonnie Fetch will be joining us in July. She's in the audience today, so we look forward to her joining the Commission. With that, does Kevin have any opening remarks?
Just good morning and welcome everyone.
Thank you. All right, well, I'll start right off. Item BK1 has been withdrawn. Item BK2, I move the Commission adopt the order on interconnection agreement concerning the interconnection agreement jointly filed by Midcontinent Communications and Missouri Valley Communications, Inc., case number PU11697.
Second.
Now, this one I'm going to take some time to go through because we're meeting actually today because of this as well as also our next telecommunication order. But on June 14th of 2011, Midcontinent requested from Missouri Valley Communication, Inc., interconnection exchange of local traffic under 251A and B of the Telecommunication Act. There was mediation that took place, but really nothing was resolved. And on November 14th, Midcontinent filed with North Dakota PSC a petition for arbitration. Also during that time, Missouri Valley filed a motion to dismiss Midcontinent's petition for arbitration. This commission denied that We denied the motion to dismiss on March 21st of 2012. So therefore, that set the thing in motion for arbitration to take place. The hearing was held April 4th and 5th of this year. Both companies filed lots of information about it. They filed information. Really, it was all about interconnection underneath Section 251A of the Telecommunication Act and Section 251B. Going back, U.S. Code provides that each telecommunication carrier has a duty to interconnect directly or indirectly with facilities and equipment of other telecommunication carriers, and each must have exchange carriers has additional duty to make sure it doesn't impose unreasonable discrimination conditions, number portability, and so on. And during the arbitration, Missouri Valley retained its status as an exempt rural telephone company under 251F. What was interesting about this case is that there was a recent ruling by the FCC dating May 26 of 2011 that clarified that rural exemption does not exempt rural LECs from the requirements of 251B and 251B number portability. The FCC stated very clearly that for consumers to have a choice of service providers, competitive carriers must be able to interconnect their networks with incumbent providers. And when incumbent carriers resist interconnection with competitive telecommunication carriers, it impedes the developments of facility-based voice services in those areas. To me personally, this was the big part of this when we looked at the arbitration, that the FCC, you know, clarified this May 26th of 2011. I don't think it's not coincidental that June 14th of the, you know, basically a few weeks later, Midcontinent is when they filed this case. So as we go farther into it, the arbitration provided for many different things. But basically the issues that were covered are the effective date of the interconnection agreement, which will be today, dispute resolutions for impasse as to points of interconnection. And that's one of the things that the question I had was, so now that you have a rural exemption, what does that really mean? And I think at this point, what a rural exemption, in my mind, what it really means is it lets the companies such as Missouri Valley decide where to interconnect, and they also have specific pricing standards, but this really does open up the area for much more competition. Additional things that were covered, talking about compensation, calculation of transition payments, obligation to transfer carriers, administration charges for customer changes, many different things inside the actual arbitration recommendation in our order. This can take a brief minute here to come through a couple of them. But really, it was an interesting process because it went to arbitration, took several days to work through, and then it came to us, and we actually, that was the last work session that Commissioner Clark sat in on, so it was good to have his expertise on it. But I think as we went through it, it really, the FCC decision really, I think, set the stage for my opinion of how we looked at this case. The effective date, like I said, is today. Compensation, I think, was one of the bigger issues during the arbitration. We looked at it. There was some back and forth of what would be the rates as customers transitioned back and forth. And I think that worked out very well. And with that, I think everything is in order on this. I expect there'll be a lot of questions, and this will actually, I think, set the stage for a lot of future discussion between cases such as this. So with that, I'm recommending approval.
There's no question that the declaratory judgment of the FCC from May of last year really was the clarifying factor. Some may say clarifying, some may say the confusing factor, because to the degree that it seems to run counter to the rural exemption retention that was ruled on by this commission a number of years ago, I suppose you could say it's somewhat confusing. But it is what paved the way for this arbitration. Judge Ward, I think, did an excellent job in hearing the case and writing a recommended order, and I find myself in complete compliance or in complete agreement with the arbitrator.
I think that both of us, or all three of us, when we had the meeting, are well aware of the implications of this. But it is a trend, a movement from the FCC level to make sure there's more competition. And I think that part of that FCC order made sure that state commissions were involved in this process. And that's exactly what we're doing now. So I'm actually looking forward to going to the telecommunication meeting this summer and walking through this with all the groups there and answering any questions, because this is significant today.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Item BK3, I move the Commission adopt the order adopting the hearing officer's June 26, 2012 recommendations, finding of fact, conclusion of law and order concerning the proposed switching access price schedules for all of the companies listed in the announcement.
Second.
Okay. On November 18th of 2011, the FCC issued its Universal Service Intercarrier Compensation Reform Order. The transitional order required a series of transitional intrastate access charges reductions for both price cap carriers of return price cap and rate of return carriers, with the first reduction to be effective July 1st, 2012. There are 21 companies listed in the announcement, and what we have is the one of the rulings of this case as well said that the companies needed to reduce their interstate charges by 50%. So during the hearing, it was actually by ALJ that I sat in on it, just because I wanted to follow through all the discussion. And it's trade secret information, but all the companies showed how they were able to reduce those charges by 50%, and surprisingly enough, there was no interveners in the case. So everything seems to be in order. It's in compliance with the FCC guidance, which actually needs to go in effect July 1st of 2012, is why we're having this special meeting today. So with that, everything here is also in order.
I agree.
All in favor?
Aye.
Item BK4. I move the Commission adopt the order approving electric service area agreement, establishing and designating the service locations to be served by McLean Electric Cooperative, Inc. and Montreal Williams Electric Cooperative in McLean and Montreal counties of North Dakota, case number PU 12-196.
Second.
In May of 2012, McLean Electric filed an application for approval of a service area agreement with Montreal Williams Electric Cooperative. On May 16th, the Commission issued a notice of filing, notice of informal hearing, and notice of opportunity for hearing, which provided until June 26th of this year for comments. No responses have been received. On June 20th, the Commission discussed the issues with Commission staff and the applicants at an informal hearing. In my opinion, this is a good use of the two companies' planning. It effectively harmony in the area. It doesn't allow for overbuilding. And really, the agreement is pretty simple. It basically lays out where, right down the county line, Montreal County, and as well as McLean County. So I think what's unique about this is usually we find ourselves in these between a investor-owned and a co-op. In this case, it's two co-ops, but North Dakota law says that we approve or disapprove these, so everything, I believe, is in order.
Yeah, it is interesting to note that it is an agreement filed between two cooperatives as opposed to between a cooperative and an investor-owned utility, and certainly the genesis of the service area agreement law that was passed a few years ago was to deal with territorial integrity challenges or issues. But at the same time, the charge of the Public Service Commission to ensure that there's not wasteful duplication does seem to carry over to relationships between two cooperatives. Whether that was the intent of the legislation or not, it is nonetheless the legal standard, and I have to applaud the leadership of both those cooperatives for bringing it to us and ensuring that that development out there in the patch and meeting those demands and needs is done in an orderly fashion. So it's very well done, and I appreciate the effort on the parts of both cooperatives.
All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
And that concludes the items in my portfolio. Commissioner Kramer.
Thank you. Casey 1. I move the Commission grant Enbridge Pipelines LLC's request to withdraw its application for waiver of procedures and time schedules, an amended corridor certificate, and an amended route permit concerning its Little Muddy Station Connection project in Williams County, North Dakota, case number PU11606.
Second.
This is simply a, after the initial filing and the initial order, there was some challenge they were having with a particular landowner, so they filed a deviation. In the meantime, they worked out their differences with the landowner, and so there's no longer a need for the variance, and so they've asked to withdraw it, and it seems appropriate that they would, and it's appropriate that we grant it.
All in favor?
Aye. Aye. KC2, I move the Commission execute a contract with ProSource Technologies, Inc. for construction inspection services concerning Enbridge Pipelines LLC's construction of its Berthold Station expansion project in Ward County, North Dakota, case number PU11232.
Second.
I think we just issued an order on consent here recently on a whole bunch of these, and this one's one that evidently wasn't quite ready to go. But we've, as you know, we've been last few years, and especially in the last couple of years, utilizing the filing fees from the various siting applications to hire outside third-party construction inspection as well as post-construction inspection, just given the workload and the demands, and of course the fact that that the filing fees allow us to do inspection without affecting taxpayers. And so this was just one more of those contracts that came in just a little bit later. So everything seems to be in order, and appreciate the work of what is now becoming quite a nice little bank of third-party inspectors that that don't have a conflict with a particular project that's in front of us. So everything's in order.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Just out of curiosity, how many contracts do we have now? Does anybody know off the top of their head? With
contracts?
Yeah, with engineering firms. How many engineering firms and how many?
Well, engineering firms, we're contracting with, probably five.
Five, sure.
Number of contracts?
Is it approaching? Yeah. Did you say 30?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. All right. KC3. I move the Commission adopt the findings of fact, conclusions of law, and order issuing First Amended Certificate of Corridor Compatibility Number 125 and First Amended Route Permit Number 134 to Highland Operating LLC for the construction of a natural gas liquids pipeline, all in McKenzie County, North Dakota, case number PU10-554.
Second.
This one was a fairly interesting one for our little 6-inch, 10-mile pipeline out in the middle of beautiful prairie. There was a day that was big. This actually was originally a case that was heard by an administrative law judge. We issued the order as per the ALJ's recommendation, but it was a very circuitous route that was taken rather than a more direct route that was taken. And frankly, the circuitous route did go through some fairly sensitive areas. The purpose for the original route being the way it was because there were, again, there was a landowner issue on the more direct route that seemed to be at an impasse, and so they chose this longer route. In the meantime, they were able to work out something compatible with the desires of that particular landowner. They came back and said, you know, we'd prefer this straighter route. It's a shorter route. The purpose of the line is it carries NGLs from Highland's processing plant near Cartwright to their to the rail facility, I think at Trenton, and so it's not a long route. This is a much better route in terms of its efficiency, in terms of its impact on cultural and natural resources, and everything's in order. I'm glad that we are able to help them provide and create a better route.
Absolutely, this route ended up being quite a bit shorter too, but one that was interesting about this when we had the informal was this was one of the cases that really laid out the discussion that the Commission's having as well as industry with the State Historical Society on preserving some of the artifacts. So it prompted further discussion with the Commission. I think we've got a good setup in place now where we're really going to work with them to make sure that we have the information to determine the siting, but the information is not readily available for the public for some of these archaeological sites.
All in favor?
Aye. That ends items in my portfolio.
Okay. I believe unless there are anything else for the good of the order?
I think other than we do have a slight... We have one issue for discussion under administrative that getting back to the Enbridge pipeline.
You want to do that right away or should we come back? Or? can answer questions.
We can answer questions, and we can do that either way. It's fine.
With that, if there are any questions, we'd be happy to answer them.
I wanted to ask why BK1 was withdrawn.
Actually, it wasn't in my portfolio.
Okay.
And was that what it was? Okay. It was the wrong case number.
Okay, no problem.
A variety of errors in the first one.
In terms of Midcontinent and Missouri Valley, that's Williston area?
Yes.
Okay. For a consumer, what does it mean?
Well, it's an excellent question, because what it means for a consumer from one viewpoint would it mean that you get more competition, more choices that you can pick from. But in actuality, some of the consumers now, they won't even see an impact. There are consumers right now that are Midcontinent customers that are having traffic on Missouri Valley lines, and some of those are just going to transition over. So they won't see any effect. But I think the effect for consumers is that there'll be more people up there that they can request services from, certain types of services.
You know, the whole point of the original Act, Telecommunications Act, was to, in fact, encourage competition. The whole point of a rural exemption, of course, is to acknowledge that there are places where, like many places in North Dakota, where they're very rural, where it's not perhaps practical, and that you need to protect the investment of the rural providers. The Williston area, of course, provides an interesting situation, given that it is a rural area traditionally that is growing very quickly. And so accusations of things like cherry picking, of course, you'll hear about, and what's fair to the rural co-op that's been serving it all those years. And those are all legitimate public policy questions. But the declaratory ruling by the FCC in May of last year is what sort of paved the way for this opportunity. And like I said, in some respects it may provide clarification, in other respects it may actually provide some confusion. So remains to be seen, but what this order does is I think it meets both the spirit and the letter of the law. I have no doubt that there'll be somebody beyond this commission that will have an opportunity to hear it all again.
There was another effect, though, David. If you look at the other side of it, there would be some that could argue that now that Missouri Valley is no longer quote protected on some of this, there will be a long-term effect that you'll have someone serving the area that maybe isn't as committed to the area. So depending what side you look at that, I think what Kevin was setting up was exactly that. I think that wasn't all three of us, the two voting today, were very aware of that. But it really, the questions that I had is, this FCC ruling, what is somebody going to appeal that? Because that was the basis of this, and I don't suspect this will be the end of this case by any means.
Was Midcontinent offering local phone service before this, or were they allowed to?
They were allowed to by using Missouri Valley's lines, okay, the way I understand it. Okay. And then that was part of the arbitration, is that there was a lot of discussion. Well, I don't know how much it was, but there was significant discussion about compensation as they transitioned back and forth, how much they would get paid on some of this. Quite honestly, the arbitrator, I thought, did a very good job laying it out and going through all the issues. But as Kevin said, what really set the stage for me was the FCC recent decision, ruling, that kind of made it very clear in my mind where they're going with this.
Yeah, there are really two tracks. I mean, one track is did the Public Service Commission follow the law? And the second one is it a good law? But that's not for us to decide. That's for someone else to decide.
Well, we find ourselves in many cases. I mean, we just were in here with the Otter Tail North Central case at the last meeting. Similar type of issues. So I suspect if you talk to the folks in Missouri Valley, they might give you a different viewpoint on some of that. But I really think that we followed what we needed to do here.
On BK4, what are the main population centers, if there are any, that are affected?
This is a good question. Let's see if we can find out. I guess the two counties, any of the rural areas, the cities would be served. Trying to look here at my map real quick. It's hard to say exactly, Dave, because I don't know exactly if any of the cities they serve, but I can certainly get back to you on that.
Okay. There's a map available somewhere?
There is. I actually have a map of the two counties.
Okay.
But I can't tell you with certainty exactly which of the cities the co-ops would serve by an investor-owned in some of that area.
Okay. So the early arrival, is that going to be a fait accompli, so to speak?
We hope to be on time for all of our meetings.
Very good.
A That's all I know.
Of course, our clocks range. You know, there's about a 15-minute range depending on what room you're in. So that's always a little. I think that somebody's doing that on purpose. I think, but anyway.
And we look forward to Commissioner Fetch doing this starting on Monday full time, if you will.
And so she'll clarify all the confusion.
Good.
And our next regular scheduled meeting will be July 11th. So with that, if there are no further questions, we could go right to the...
We might as well go right into admin if it's okay with you.